Now the plaintiffs in a landmark climate change case in Montana have won, potentially setting precedent in other states. The youth plaintiffs in Held versus Montana argued that the state deprived them of their right granted in their own state constitution to a clean and healthy environment. Plaintiffs, represented by the group Our Children's Trust, argued that the state deprived them of this right by promoting the use of fossil fuels and by explicitly outlawing the consideration of climate change when considering new energy projects. An appeal is expected. The case, the ruling, is unprecedented, and it could have an impact on future environmental law elsewhere in the country. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the idea of climate change lawsuits on behalf of young people? Do you think people should have constitutional rights to a clean and healthy environment, as states like Montana and a few others do? Would you want to see that in Wisconsin's state constitution? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Steph Tyes, professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School and associate dean for the UW-Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies. Steph, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here, as usual.
Before we dig into the particulars of this Montana case, it seems like I've been seeing this kind of lawsuit on behalf of younger people about climate change popping up here and there around the country. Are you seeing this as a growing tactic?
Yes. Our Children's Trust, the nonprofit that has been leading all of these cases, has been pretty active in a bunch of different states, both building on states that have constitutional requirements for consideration of the environment, but also leading different types of actions, not just against states themselves, but also against various companies, et cetera.
How big a deal is this ruling in this Montana lawsuit? Is this something that you think might reverberate elsewhere in the country?
Yeah, so there's a few other states that have similar kinds of rights in their constitution. I think Hawaii is one of them. And it's likely that this will set some kind of soft precedent for similar lawsuits in those cases. Now, it's important to be aware of what's involved in this case, mm-hmm. because the case doesn't compel the government to do anything affirmative to address climate change. But what it does do is the state court judge has said that the law that was passed by Montana that restricted agencies from reviewing the climate change impacts of their various actions, they said that that was unconstitutional according to the state constitution. And so that takes off the table this sort of veil of ignorance that was created by those laws. And furthermore, the judge said that actually compelled agencies, the state constitution compels agencies to have to consider those effects when making things like permitting decisions for new power plants, making decisions like opening new kind of wells, all of those kinds of decisions.
Right. So you're keying in on some of the unique things of Montana where we might not have a similar lawsuit in Wisconsin. One, Montana's state constitution guarantees a healthful environment, clean and healthful environment to their residents. Wisconsin and most states don't do that. And this particular law saying, hey, you can't consider climate change in the decisions. A lot of states, of course, don't have that. How much of this hinged on those two very particular issues in a state like Montana?
Both of those were incredibly important to the decision here. For example, in Wisconsin, we don't have any bar against agencies considering climate change. And so there's been a number of lawsuits against the Public Service Commission for failure to adequately consider the impact of climate change on new permitting decisions for power plants. And so that wasn't ever taken off the table in Wisconsin. And it's true that while Wisconsin doesn't have the right to a clean and healthy environment, we do have some softer aspects of our Constitution that perhaps groups might try to use even more emphatically after this case. We have, for example, in Wisconsin, the public trust doctrine, which is limited to waters, but climate change can potentially affect the availability of waters. And we also have a right to hunt and fish in Wisconsin. And to the extent that a lawsuit can be geared up to claim that failure to consider the right to fish, hunt and fish to consider climate change impact on the right to hunt and fish, that might also be an avenue that litigants could take.
Talking to Steph Ty from the UW Law School, Associate Dean for the UW-Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies. Looking at this lawsuit, you may have seen the headlines out of Montana. a lawsuit on behalf of younger people challenging a law in that state that said state agencies couldn't consider climate change in evaluating energy development there. You can join in with your reactions, your thoughts, maybe your questions at 800-642-1234. And what do you think about that wider issue of strategy, really, of issuing lawsuits on behalf of younger people on the basis that they may be greatly affected by climate change down the road? Join in at 800-642-1234. And this idea, Steph, groups like Our Children's Trust, filing lawsuits on behalf of younger people trying to demonstrate that they in particular would feel harm of climate-related policies. How does that affect issues of things like standing in cases like these?
Yeah, so what's interesting is that Montana also has a somewhat unique aspect of its constitutional doctrine that says that young people also have this kind of special standing, that those under 18 are still available to bring these kinds of lawsuits. And this kind of right is protected in the Montana state constitution because the idea is that, you know, without that availability of lawsuits, then, you know, generations in the future will be missing a lot of key protections. And so I think part of that, too, is part of the overall strategy in bringing this case. Other states don't necessarily have that right laid out as Montana. And so some of that will sort of result in differences in some of the outcomes in different states.
Big picture climate change policy. Do you expect to see a lot of difference made by lawsuits like these, or are solutions more likely to come from legislative or executive actions?
I think it comes from a lot of them, right? So one thing that this case does say is it puts a halt on some of the legislation that is sort of anti-taking climate change action. That is, it will give future legislatures some pause in terms of passing laws saying you can't consider the impact of some kind of agency action on the environment. And so some of the sort of threat of climate change promoting legislation, basically fossil fuel promoting legislation, some of that will be lessened. But I think that still further action still needs to be taken, not just in terms of the defense, which this is basically a defensive action, and more of an active kind of engagement. For example, California and New York have created these large climate change programs to ensure a shift in terms of their energy grid to more renewables. And I think Washington State is starting to do that. And so it takes not only defensive actions such as this, but also, positive actions such as what's being done in some states.
We're talking about the victory of plaintiffs in a landmark climate case in Montana. Our guest is Steph Tai, professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School, associate dean for the UW-Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about this particular Montana youth climate case? Would you want to see similar action here in Wisconsin? How important do you think the courts are or should be when it comes to climate change? Wisconsin is not one of a handful of states with a so-called Green Amendment guaranteeing something like a clean and healthful environment as Montana does. Would you like it to be? Would you like to have that clause in the Constitution? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with UW-Madison Law Professor Steph Tai about the victory of plaintiffs in a Montana youth climate change case, what it means for environmental litigation elsewhere in the country. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What role do you think young people should play in climate change activism? How about lawsuits on their behalf? What do you think of the idea of a state constitutional guarantee of a clean environment, a healthful environment, as Montana and a few other states have? Wisconsin does not have that clause. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Steph, we've got a handful of states, as I mentioned, with these environmental guarantees in their constitution. In addition to Montana, you've got Illinois, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Hawaii. Interesting mixed bag. Is there is there a movement to do this in more states, or was that something that just happened and then stopped happening across the country?
No, that's a great question. One of the difficulties is that many states are pretty locked in terms of being able to pass constitutional amendments. I don't remember the survey of how constitutional amendments are initiated, but it varies a lot from state to state. Some of them have to start off with petitions. Some of them have multiple methods. And so I think we've been seeing fewer constitutional amendments recently, but that might change. Again, part of that's going to depend on the electoral system in different states. And with various observations of gerrymandering going on, in various states, I think that that will make it more difficult in some states to initiate these kind of constitutional changes.
Let's bring in a caller. Doug is with us in Colfax. Doug, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I think it would be helpful to add that to the Wisconsin state constitution, given the climate change ramifications seem to be only getting worse. I would just like to add that I think, given that wind and solar are now cheaper forms of generating electricity than any other, that it would make sense for our state to just push for renewables, period, just because it makes financial sense.
Doug, thanks a lot for the call. And Steph, do you see the debate changing that way from we're talking about the environment and climate change to we're talking about economic impacts of alternative energy?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think part of the way in which climate change has gotten politicized ignores some of the real economic realities. I mean, even without a strong climate change policy in Wisconsin, we have shifted from in the 90s being around in the 80% reliance upon coal-generated electricity to now probably around, like, I think 50%. Natural gas is much less expensive. Solar and wind are also less expensive. And so there's already some kind of economic reason to shift energy sources. And in some ways, the people fighting against it are fighting against what's actually technologically and economically more practical for everyone.
Thanks for that call. Nadia joins us now in Milwaukee. Nadia, hi.
Hi. Yes, I'm a recent college graduate, and I think as a young person, it's vitally important for Wisconsin to adapt this clause. And I'm hoping that the case in Montana sets some precedent so that we can adapt changes as soon as possible. I also don't think it's just the responsibility of our young people in Wisconsin. I think that parents and grandparents should be worrying about what our future is, and everybody should care less about perhaps how much it will cost now and how much we can gain from this economically in the future.
Nadia, thanks a lot for that call. Steph, do you see a growth in advocacy, whether it's actually in the courts or not, either by young people or, as Nadia says, on their behalf by parents and grandparents when it comes to environmental issues?
I absolutely agree with Nadia that it shouldn't just be borne by the younger people. But I do see a huge growth in students interested in learning about and addressing climate change. When I first started teaching at UW Law School in 2006, there were students who were interested in environmental law, but they weren't focused specifically on climate change. Whereas now, like, I'm getting almost every student cares about it, and even students who are going into different areas of law. They're planning to go into being like a public defender or a prosecutor. They're planning on being like a housing lawyer. They're still caring about climate change. And so I think there is this real shift because we're seeing a lot of the actual changes appear before our eyes. And so, yes, I think it's changing. I'm sad that it's taken so long, and I'm sad that our generations have let you down.
Nadia, thanks a lot for that call. Steph, we've been focusing on one particular piece of legislation, litigation, and a particular kind of lawsuit. Are there other environmental law issues you are focused on right now, especially related to climate change?
Yeah, so there's two aspects. So there's the litigation element of things where there is litigation against not just this law, which prohibited the consideration of the impact of climate change, but also litigation on the sort of individual permit level, right? I mentioned that in Wisconsin, that the Public Service Commission has to go through and approve of different permits. And so that's happening on the ground everywhere in different states. Allegations that state agencies are failing to fully consider the cost of climate change. And there's a lot of those cases are fairly successful. There's also cases involving the listing of endangered species because climate change creates a huge threat to them. So it happens in a lot of different areas. There's also sort of these private nuisance suits against individual companies for their contributions to climate change. And so I would say that, yes, those are a lot of different kind of active areas of litigation. At the same time, there's also legislation, like, for instance, the Inflation Reduction Act, that is trying to, push more money towards mitigation-related measures and adaptation-related measures. And so we have to think about all of those in the legal mix as well. And then finally, there's, I want to sort of bring up also how there are private companies that are actually trying to affirmatively respond to concerns about climate change and sort of making these sorts of commitments to reduce their own carbon footprints. And many of those are working with what we often don't think of as legal structures because it's not like lawsuits, but what they're doing is they're crafting different types of contracts to ensure that their entire supply chain is abiding by certain types of standards to lower their carbon footprint. And so there's all of that out there that's happening right now.
Steph, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Steph Tighe, professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School and associate dean for the UW Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies. We've been talking about a landmark climate change case called Held versus Montana. A group representing young plaintiffs there challenged a state law under their state constitution. We've been talking about youth lawsuits there and elsewhere in the country. If you have thoughts on that, if you've participated in something like this or someone you know has, love to hear your story, you can email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org.